Welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Talks, your looking glass into the Chinese and Asian startup ecosystem for anybody that wants to start a company, invest in companies, or simply wants to learn more about what's happening in this part of the world. I'm Oscar Ramos, and I'm going to be your host for today. Our guest is going to be Nicolas Ducre. Nicolas is a partner in Cathay Innovation, a VC fund that was an early stage investor in the one of the recent successful IPO companies, Pinduoduo, a company that is disrupting the existing leaders in the e-commerce market in China. Nicolas is going to share how did they met the founder, how they originally connected with the founder of that company, and how as an international VC were able to get into that very hot deal. He's also going to share some lessons learned from the experience of Pinduoduo about the story of the company, how they pivoted, how they changed things, what were the tipping points that made the company successful. And he's going to share also some opinions of as an international VC that has operations globally about what's the potential and the challenges that the social commerce model that Pinduoduo embraces could have in internationalization. Without any further ado, let's talk with Nicolas. Welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. Today, we have Nicolas Ducre, partner in Cathay Capital. Nicolas has been for 16 years in China, originally in Beijing, where he came to open the rep office of Orange Group. Then he started the innovation lab scouting for technology, and that led to studying the corporate venturing operations of Orange. After that, he moved and he worked for a semi-independent VC fund that was backed by Publicis and Orange. And today, in Cathay Capital, he runs the VC activities of the company in China. Nicolas, welcome to the podcast, and please let us know what brought you to China so long ago.
I moved to China just after graduation. I was very interested in technology at the time, and I did my internship in Hong Kong, working for a mobile supplier at the time. And I really realized that China was going to lead to create some very interesting innovations. So back in 2002, actually, it was still pretty easy to come to China and find a job here. So I could get a position at the rep office of France Telecom and to start doing investigation of the local market.
So you came here early, 2002, and you came here because you thought there was a land of opportunities with a lot of interesting happening. What was the reaction of people back then? Did they saw you as an adventurer? They saw you as a crazy guy?
Not really. In 2002, China was already pretty modernized, and there were less foreigners, but I didn't have the feeling I was doing something exceptional. I was just trying to go where there was interesting opportunities. And actually, I didn't plan to stay here for so long, but it just happened that year after year, I found more interesting things to do, and I just stayed here because in such a market with so many, many new excitement and new innovation, definitely it's good to be here in the long run.
So you have a background in engineering, industrial engineering, and you end up in the telecom industry, now more software industry. What made you make that shift from a pure technology engineering into the VC side of things?
The shift happened when I attended business school. My degree there was management of information technologies. So this is when I started to enter the field of telecom. As a matter of fact, I was initially working on ERP subjects and then started to work for a telecom operator. I started to be much more familiar with this industry.
Nicolas, let us know a little bit about Cathay Capital and the type of investments that you do.
So I manage the China activities of the VC fund of Cathay Capital, which is Cathay Innovation. So we are a cross-border fund. We have offices in San Francisco, in Paris, and Shanghai. And we're only one team on three continents. We're also sponsored and invested by a number of large companies like Valeo, Total, Michelin, and so on. And we contribute to the open innovation activities. We help them identify startups with whom they could work potentially or in which they could invest. And we also help them understand the new innovations coming from startups on the three geographies.
You work a lot with companies in the automotive industry, and you mentioned right now that you help them find startups where they can invest or they can explore some open innovation initiatives. What is the rationale behind, why do corporates, why do big multinationals that actually have a big operation here in China need somebody like you to help them?
Well, many large corporations actually have their own corporate venture activity. However, they need to diversify the source of knowledge. So it's always also a good idea to invest in funds to actually get exposure to maybe a long tail of startups and a long tail of innovations they may not see as a corporation. in particularly in China, when you think about European corporates, it's actually pretty difficult to really understand what's happening on the ground in China. And investing in a fund like us is actually a very good way to get access to local startups and really know what's happening here.
So can you share some examples of companies? I mean, obviously, you're heavy backed by corporates in the automotive industry. So can you share any examples of startups that you are involved in and the trends that they're capitalizing on here in China?
We invested in one of the top artificial intelligence companies based in Beijing, which is called Momenta. They develop a machine vision algorithm for autonomous drive and also HD maps. So basically, they aggregate a large amount of data, driving data that they use to create algorithms that will allow the car to drive itself. And this, of course, was made in a very close cooperation with our investor, with Valeo, because Valeo, as a tier one supplier to the automotive industry, is looking for technology solutions to make cars smarter and possibly self-driving in the future.
Can you give us an idea of the scale of that company?
That company has been growing very fast. I mean, they raise a lot of money. They basically raise a new round every 2 or 3 months. So we, at the time we invested, which was a year and a half ago, it was a co-investment with Neo Capital and Daimler. And since then, they raised a number of new rounds of financing from some large institutions in China. And they just passed $1 billion valuation mark.
Well, congratulations on your unicorn. But you've also invested in companies that are also in the cross-border space. I mean, you're a global team with presence in Europe, America, and Asia. So can you share any examples of cross-border companies?
So we are very proud to have invested in one of SOSV portfolio companies, which is called Chopal. Chopal operates Western and foreign brands on the Chinese market, helping them with their e-commerce activities, their omnichannel activities, their offline retail activities. So we invested in that company because we have, as a firm, we have very good resources in Europe in terms of getting access to brands and products that Chopal could potentially sell in China. So we've been very involved with the company to actually bring new brands to the team so they could actually grow and strengthen the offering in terms of skincare product or baby product that they're going to sell on the Chinese market.
So it seems that you're very hands-on VC, first with your close collaboration with the corporate LPs, the investors in the fund that even contribute to a level of evaluating potential companies. I don't know if you also work with them on pilots and also on the specific use of your resources. Do you feel this is something that that as a foreign fund in China is heavily valued by local entrepreneurs?
It's not only extremely valued, but also is a very strong competitive advantage. In China, there's a lot of capital, and being able to add something else is actually very important to startups and also to the investors, of course. So we spend a lot of time to support our portfolio and our investors. It's what we really try to explain to new portfolio companies. When we look at companies, we explain to them what kind of resources we have and how we can help. And this is due actually to the culture of Cathay. Cathay Capital was founded by an entrepreneur. We are a very entrepreneurial firm. Rather than a pure financing or investment company, we're actually a very entrepreneur-friendly company.
So we wanted to talk and learn more about Cathay Capital and Cathay Innovation, but one of your best deals and probably one of the most famous, a company that recently went public called Pinduoduo. Can you explain a bit about to the audience about what's Pinduoduo?
Pinduoduo is a social commerce marketplace. They allow merchants to sell their product to a large amount of users using actually a method of sharing deals in a very, very low friction way. So they use WeChat mini programs and embedded WeChat payment to boost the virality of the deals and of the discounts that they allow people to share.
So you share, I mean, in this description, you had a lot of very Chinese local concepts. And one of the first ones that you use is something that sometimes is confusing for people when we talk about social commerce. So can you explain for the audience what social commerce?
Social commerce is actually a way to use the social network of people as traffic to generate e-commerce transactions. In the case of Pinduoduo, it's actually the users who promote the deals to their friend rather than the seller to buy marketing to expose their product to buyers.
I mean, one of the key things for social commerce to have explode in China and to a certain degree become a very, very relevant area of the whole online commerce is this existing ecosystem that exists in the country where there's a lot of social networks that already have a lot of features embedded in their DNA that facilitate this type of transaction? And you describe it as frictionless. I mean, what would be, in your opinion, like the 2-3 key features that make Pinduoduo solution frictionless?
So first is the mini programs that WeChat offers. So a mini program have been around for a year and a half, more or less. So they basically allow software publishers to run code inside WeChat rather than have people download a separate native application. And that's very important because it allows people to stay in WeChat to transact. Payment is integrated, authentication is integrated, localization of the user is integrated. And of course, because people spend so much time on WeChat in China, if we offer them the possibility to transact and to stay in WeChat at the same time, then it allows much more transaction and conversion.
So these mini programs, they've been, some people describe them as basically apps that run in the WeChat ecosystem, and the WeChat ecosystem becoming the new operating system that is actually cross-platform, because it works in a very similar way, independently of the software platform that runs the phone, might be Android, iOS, or any other platform. What's your thought about that? Do you think that's going to be something that's going to happen?
I strongly believe in the concept of WeChat being an operating system. WeChat has clearly always refused to develop phones or to make an OS, and definitely they have the technical capability to do it. They want to remain a cross-platform solution where, as you were saying, iOS users and Android users that communicate and transact. But in the end, the usage is people will have less and less mobile apps installed in their phone, and we spend more and more time on WeChat.
So let's go back to Pinduoduo. And you were an early, Cathay Innovation was an early investor in Pinduoduo. What stage did you invest in the company?
We invested in the B round.
And what was the size of the company back then, the B round?
At the time of our investment, the company was still pretty small. I mean, compared to how big they are today, they were like 200 or 300 people. And the monthly sales volume was in the range of $50 million. So very, very small compared to these figures. And that was 2 years ago.
So 2 years ago, you invested in a company that already had 200 employees in a B round. How big, how large was this B round?
It was a $50 million round.
And now the company went public. Do you know what are the numbers of the company right now?
So the company actually just announced its Q2 figures. So the GMV was at $40 billion for the last 12 months. And actually quarterly, it's a growth of 100%. So they still growing very, very fast. The net revenues is in around $400 million.
And the company, when you invested 2 years ago, they were raising $50 million. Do you remember how much they raised in their IPO?
They raised $1.6 billion at the IPO.
So good return. We tried to ask our audience if they had any specific questions that they wanted to ask you to learn more about Pinduoduo. And I mean, to be honest, we had a lot of questions. So we want to make sure that we give enough time for the audience to ask the questions, because actually some of them are very interesting. Some of the questions they were asking about how did you meet the founder? How was the deal introduced to you?
So the founder was known to us actually because he's a multi-entrepreneur and we knew his previous company, Lutzy. And Colin was at his third startup actually with Pinduoduo. His first startup was, if you know his profile, he's actually a former Google, and he was one of the first Google employees in China. And he became an entrepreneur and launched an e-commerce operation company called Lutzy, which is like a Taobao partner, a Tipeee. And they help brands to run their e-commerce operation in China. After that, he created a mobile game company. And as a matter of fact, the initial concept of Pinduoduo was based on merging a mobile game concept and e-commerce operation concept, kind of gamifying e-commerce. So we got to know the founder with his previous company. And when he informed us he was launching a new project, we came and take a look.
So when did he inform you about the new project? Did he inform you when he launched the company, or did he inform you when he was already in a stage of development that was more like a already VC side?
We basically kept in touch with him. And when he was formally raising a new round of financing and it was really attracting external investors, and we re-engaged the conversation and look at the opportunity to invest.
So when were you evaluating the opportunity, what was exactly what made you think, okay, this is going to be something, there's something special here?
Actually, when we met him and he was formally raising a new round of financing, he was selling fruit. He was a fruit seller. He was actually having some difficult times raising money because there was a lot of competition in fruit e-commerce in China, but he was selling fruit in a very special way. He was importing fruits from overseas, good quality fruits, and he was selling using social commerce. And when we met him, he actually said, well, I'm thinking about expanding this model to become a marketplace. So the initial product was called Pinraro, and the new product was called Pindoduo. A few months after that, after the investment, the two concepts merged, and the fruit became a very small part of Pindoduo. But at the time of our investment, it was actually selling fruit. And during my due diligence with the company, I visited some warehouse where they were managing, you know, packaging the fruit and shipping the fruit.
We have another question from the audience. You basically were talking right now about how the fruit vertical in the online commerce space was very crowded. But the truth is that the e-commerce space itself was also a space, particularly the e-commerce space for like marketplaces, was very, 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 very dominated by some key players already, very big companies, very well funded, and very good at iteration and exploration of new models. So what did you find in that model that made you think that was going to be a potential alternative to these existing companies?
It's true that at the time, Ali and JD was already very powerful, and we had a quasi duopoly of the whole e-commerce market. However, nobody was using social network to actually sell. The concept that was shown to us when we had the meetings with the company was brand new. Nobody had done that before. And it was obvious for us that at some point in time, social commerce would become a thing. And so when we met the company, we were convinced that this company was going to be successful. Actually, it didn't take a lot of time to convince everybody to invest in the company. The founder is really exceptional, and his vision is very clear. He can really express his vision very clearly. So when he explained to us, I'm going to set up a marketplace and sell on social networks, then that's what I'm going to achieve.
Okay, so that's obviously an interesting idea that was different to what the main players were going for. But it's also an idea that has, in some degree, it has limited, very low barriers of entry. And China is a market where when something shows promise, you're going to be copied, and something's going to be copied, and you're going to have a lot of companies trying to go for the same opportunity. So what made you think that team had any type of advantage to conquer that market?
Well, that team was actually expert in running e-commerce and also expert in running mobile games, which means they were actually expert in user interface and user experience. So that was key. And if you think about it, social commerce is really a way to sell goods and products with a user acquisition cost, which is close to zero. And this is what the company has been doing for many, many months. Actually, they were aggregating millions of users, hundreds of millions of users, by paying zero marketing cost. And this is clearly an execution capability that we felt was going to be here by investing in that company, thanks to actually the past experience as entrepreneur.
And we have another question. Somebody wants to learn, what is the turning point? What was the point? What happened? What was the event? What was the trigger for Pinduoduo to explode as a company in terms of growth?
The growth in GMV was continuous. Actually, there was not really a point where it accelerated, except that at some point in time, the company, because it was achieving very good results, decided they were getting into a land grab kind of mindset, and they started to spend money on marketing. So they started to actually sponsor some TV shows and so on. And they could have grown very, very fast still by spending very little marketing. But by spending more, they grab land and they basically conquer markets. And if you know about the PDD situation today, a lot of the users and the buyers are actually in tier 4 and tier 5 cities or in the countryside of China, which are populations that are really underserved by the big guys. So they could execute a very smart strategy of getting into lower income population to actually offer them with goods with very good price. And of course, this population is much more price sensitive than population can be in larger cities. So that was, I think, the winning recipe for Pinduoduo.
So Pinduoduo is a company in the social e-commerce space, and the consumers are very price sensitive. So companies in China tend to be very creative to try to find ways to be able to have margins and make money. So what's the actual business model? How does Pinduoduo make money?
So Pinduoduo, contrary to what Amazon or eBay would be doing, does not charge any commission. They actually charge marketing services to brands and to merchants. So if specific merchants want to have their product more visible on the platform, they will have to pay for it. And so basically merchants buy traffic. And because the platform is pretty smart, you can actually allocate product to people who are more likely to buy it. So there's some kind of a machine learning or targeting system in it as well. So it allows basically merchants to position their product in front of the buyers with most potential.
So they're working on a marketing model where the compensation comes from the merchants, the brands that are promoting the product. Is the compensation based on actual performance in terms of sales, or is the compensation based on exposure?
So initially, it was based on exposure, but the platform is very smart, so it can actually allow performance-based business models as well.
Based on that, we're now in a situation where we have another question from someone else from the audience that really connects with one of our previous episodes. We're seeing now a trend of Chinese companies expanding abroad, and this international expansion is based on the fact that some of these models are starting to be copied. So China is not just a country that is importing models, it's also exporting new business models, new innovative products. What do you think would be the challenges for the Pinduoduo model to be exported to other markets?
I think Pinduoduo model has a great potential in emerging markets where people are more price sensitive. But you have a number of initial conditions that need to be here for actually the platform to grow as fast as it has grown in China. And it goes beyond WeChat and mini programs and embedded payment and so on. You also need the logistics network to actually make sure the goods can be shipped to the end user. So many emerging markets don't have this kind of logistics network yet. However, they're building it. So a few years from now, I'm sure we're going to have companies, maybe Pinduoduo itself, but companies that will actually run social commerce marketplace in emerging markets. And about mature markets, the situation is a bit different because in particular in the West, Facebook and Amazon are very powerful. Facebook and Amazon are also relatively rigid in their strategy. It will be very difficult for Facebook to itself run social commerce because actually people will refuse to buy from Facebook because they believe they give too much data to Facebook. And similarly, we cannot really imagine Amazon launching a social network. But if I'm a third party, I'm coming in, let's say, in Europe and the US, and I want to do social commerce, it will be difficult for me to do it with Facebook as well. So if I have to launch my own app and hope that the virality will allow it to spread, it will probably cost me more money than if I were using WeChat or mini program in China.
So almost all the transactions that happen on Pinduoduo, they are mobile. There might be some marginal transactions that happen on a desktop, but everything happens inside WeChat. Like Pinduoduo was built inside the WeChat ecosystem, where, as you said, everything is already there. You have the payments, you have the easy way to share, you have the easy way to navigate in a rich ecosystem with the possibility that mini programs bring. Do you think that's something that can be exported to other platforms in China, or WeChat is already a good enough platform?
I think there will be, more platform will probably appear in China that will allow developers to run code in social network. And imagine what you're doing. If you think about what is being done right now on live streaming, for example, where you can already transact and so on, you can imagine also some social element in there where key opinion leaders would actually promote products and people would be able to share this product with their friends and so on.
We actually have one question here for you. I mean, Pinduoduo started selling imported high-quality fruit. Then it evolved into products, very diversified type of products. What's the future for Pinduoduo? Is there any specific categories that you think Pinduoduo is going to get into?
So Pinduoduo itself has announced that they were going to go into supporting the rural world and enabling farmers to actually sell their products on the platform, but they're still selling goods. Another direction the company is going to take is selling services. So we can imagine very well like spa treatments.
Okay, so we're talking about Pinduoduo. You back the company, you like the founder, you thought that what they were doing is the right direction. But have you actually ever bought anything in Pinduoduo?
Well, at the very beginning, actually, Pinduoduo was my sole fruit provider and I really liked the quality on the product on the platform. Most interestingly, once the company had grown, my wife and I wanted to redecorate her parents' house. And actually, her parents are in the countryside. And we could only find merchants who could deliver to her parents' place on Pinduoduo. So we basically bought sofa and new kitchen equipment on Pinduoduo. And it was delivered to the village and installed there.
Well, did you actually buy anything offline or you're full in the online world now?
Actually, the price and the quality was much better online than it was offline. Actually, offline distribution in the countryside is completely inefficient, and so the products are very expensive.
Well, thank you very much, Nicolas, for coming today and sharing. It really looks that in this case, for this founder, keeping the relationship and keep it in touch was something that was valuable for him in terms of getting the support from an investor that was able to provide some value. If anybody wants to reach out to you, they want to learn more about Cathay Innovation, how can they contact you?
The best way to contact us is via our website, www.cateinnovation.com.
Well, thank you very much, Nicolas.
Thank you, Oscar.
Hey, everyone. I just want to take a quick moment to thank our sponsor, China Accelerator. They are an accelerator based in Shanghai, bringing international ideas into China and Chinese ideas international. They're number one in what they do. They are a three-month program, and they help build your idea and make it amazingly successful. You can find out more at www.chinaaccelerator.com. People's Squared is the original co-working space in China. It's your home for startups, no matter what you're working on. Small team or large, it has all the resources, the environment, the culture, everything that you need to take your idea and make it successful. Founded by Bob Zheng, an entrepreneur himself who really understands what startups need, it's a great place to bring your team and find success. You can find out more at people-squared.com.